Hey, and welcome back to Lessons in Product Management. It is November 22nd, 2021, and today we are chatting with Taylor Heyman, Product Manager at Lendio. Yes, we are coworkers, but I learned a lot about Taylor and his career in product that I didn't know before this discussion. You see, Taylor's PM career started in startups, but how he got his start might surprise you. Taylor shares his unique experience running discovery in startups and what he learned from those experiences and how to balance the need for discovery with the need to deliver value while keeping in mind the law of unintended consequences, or what I call second order effects. It was really fun conversation. This is Lessons in Product Management. Let's get started. Hey, Taylor, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, John, how you doing?
Doing good, man. Glad to have you here.
Happy to be here. Long time no see.
I know, right? So for those of you listening, Taylor and I work together, different teams, but same company. So know each other pretty well. So Taylor, to kick things off, could you give the listeners an introduction of what you do today and what you were doing before and maybe how you got into product?
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, like you said, we work together. I'm currently product manager for lead routing at Lendio. So I work with sales and helping determine how good are the leads we're getting and whether if they're good or bad, what do we do with them? Started at Lendio fairly recently. It's been a lot of fun. It's been a great place to work. It's been a great place to learn and grow as a product manager already, but really, really enjoyed it. Before that though, so I come from like a startup background. I'm a pretty rough around the edges product manager, I guess you can call it. The last like 4 or 5 years I've been working as a product manager for different startups. Most recently I came from FreePlay, which is a local startup in Utah. They do, it's a fitness, health and exercise app. And so I was a product manager there. I joined the team right in the middle of COVID, which was a risky move, but I took the chance anyways. To help build a virtual fitness platform for fitness instructors. Spent some time there and then decided to move on to the next thing and found Lendio, where I'm at now. Your last question, how did I get into product? I think having spoken with other product managers, I feel like the common response is, I don't really know. I just kind of stumbled into it. I'm kind of the same there. I'm a people person. I like people. I'm kind of a tech nerd. I like computers and video games and technical stuff, all that stuff. I got a degree in psychology at BYU, Brigham Young University, and I had to do a capstone to finish off my degree. And so for my capstone, I did an HR internship with the talent recruiting team for one of the biggest utility companies in Arizona. And that was actually like the best thing for my career because I spent all day reading resumes, sitting in on interviews, talking with every single department in the company. And that's where I discovered project, product, and program management. And I was like, oh, that really fits my skills. I really like that. so that's kind of where I discovered the PM side of things. And so, yeah, when I graduated, I was like, all right, well, I really like that. That was interesting to me. I'm going to find a job in product management. And so joined a startup and been in startups ever since. And then ended up here at Lendio.
Very cool. That's super interesting how like life takes you different places, right? Like you're in an HR internship, expose you to every department, like inside of the organization. And then from there, you learn like what interests you and what fits your skill set. So then you went for it and got in. So. Super cool.
Yeah, no, it was a lot of fun. I wish like it's difficult, you know, because as you're trying to figure out what you're trying to do, like you're trying to figure it out, you don't know. And so, you know, when I went through my degree at BYU, I actually wanted to do clinical psychology at first, like be a marriage and family therapist. There were a couple of classes that kind of like made me realize like, maybe this isn't what I want to do. But I really like the people side of things. So I actually ended up doing an emphasis in organizational behavior, which is like teams and groups and organizations and helping them function efficiently and doing well, which is, you know, is a huge part of product management. I played lacrosse at BYU as well, and then I've coached lacrosse afterwards, like all the time, and just being around people, being around teams, and just kind of getting everybody to collaborate and work together really has kind of fit my skills. And so, you know, I'm happy I stumbled into product management. That's kind of how I got there, and it's really worked out.
Very cool. And so what we're going to talk about today with discovery, I think, is something that a lot of people coming into product maybe don't get exposed to as much. And I think it's kind of an underserved topic, with like delivery and execution being kind of more at the forefront. And I'm curious, like, I know in the past I've heard established companies say, you know, we don't have time for discovery. Let's execute and figure it out once it's in production. In a startup, it feels like you almost have like more of a reason to ignore discovery, because it's like we gotta ship fast, fail fast, and break things. You know, that whole old Facebook mantra. What was your experience in startups with the mix between discovery and delivery? How'd that kind of play out?
Yeah, great question. I feel like I've had a little bit of both ends of the spectrum in my experience. I won't name names, because I tend to tend towards one method towards rather than another. I've kind of been on both ends of the spectrum, where it's kind of been like, we need every single answer. You know, we need to discover all the unknown unknowns. You just spend so much time and research. And, you know, on one end, it was kind of like, well, all right, we're researching. That's great. But are we ever like, what are we learning? When are we actually like, what are we delivering to our users, and what value? And then on the other end, I've been with groups where I was like, why are we doing this? Like, where did this come from? This kind of feels like we're doing it just because you want to do it. You know, and there was no real kind of discovery done there. And so, yeah, my experience with startups, it's kind of been all over the spectrum. But I definitely think there's kind of a happy balance of, you know, getting in the mud with your users, your customers, whoever it may be, and learning from them and discovering, and, you know, just sitting next to them and seeing how they do things and learning from them. But then there has to be kind of that balance of, you know, you got to go and get stuff done. You got to deliver. You know, that's just kind of the business side of things. The most success that I found was, you know, finding a happy balance of both of those things, making sure that you're keeping the user and the customer very involved, and, you know, that's where you're learning from. But then making sure you're delivering value so that you can, you know, kind of, not that we want to check things off, but kind of check that box off and then continue learning and move on to the next thing type of thing. So I think finding a happy balance is really important, but making sure that user is involved in the discovery all along the way. And it's not just you saying like, oh, I think this is a good idea.
I think that's a really keen insight to find balance, right? And it's almost analogous to school, right? You mentioned getting your degree at BYU. If you accumulated all that knowledge and then did nothing with it, like, it would be pointless. Right. And discovery is the same way. You could learn from your users all day, but if you never take it and do something with what you learned, then it's really worthless.
Yeah. And don't get me started on the topic of school too much. Like I said, I'm a rough around the edges kind of product manager. School was not my thing. I'm very much an application, you know, learn by doing, learn by failing type of person. But yeah, I completely agree with that. You know, you got to learn, but, you know, learning is nothing if you don't do anything with it. So, like I said, I think a healthy balance of both is very important. If you forced me to choose one or the other, I'd say learn by failure, learn by doing. But, you know, that's my own personal preference. I don't think everybody works that way the best. But I love just kind of going heads down and getting things done and learning as we go.
Yeah, I would agree. If you do have to default to one extreme or the other, like, always default to action. I think that's a good call out. Cool. So, kind of in your experiences with startups, and then now working in, I guess we considered a growth stage startup. It's been around for about 10 years.
Yeah, but I tell everybody it's like mid-size these days. It's not startup, not small. It's mid-size.
For sure. What are some of the differences, I guess, like, are differences, commonalities? Like, has your approach to discovery changed at all since going from startups to more mid-stage growth stage?
Definitely. It's been a huge change. Probably the number one change going from startup to growth stage, mid-sized businesses. As a product manager, we always know that what we're doing, what we're building, the value we're delivering to users affects users. But the biggest change for me has been kind of realizing the impact that not only does your product or whatever you're building, the impact that it makes externally in your end users, but those around you as well, your other teammates, your other coworkers, different departments within the business. I think one of the most recent things that I've, well, speaking of failures, learning by failure, one of the most recent kind of like failures that I had was not including some of those important internal stakeholders on the ride for product discovery, all the way up to the implemented solution. And, business is important. You gotta keep the lights on and whatnot. But also, as a product manager, we need to be very customer focused. And that's part of the reason why you bring those internal stakeholders along the ride, is because they're also customer focused. And what you're doing then impacts what they're doing and how they help the end user. So coming from startups usually don't have big old legitimate marketing teams. At Lendio, we've got a big old legitimate marketing team. And, at startups, I didn't have to worry about a marketing team so much. Coming to Lendio, I've had to make sure that our marketing team is involved and in the know of what we're doing, because then that changes who they target, how they target them, and making sure that, again, our end users are having a good experience all the way through, not just with the one little piece that I may have done, but the whole experience with that company and the product. It's not only affecting just that one end user, but it's also affecting how others work within the company. So in fact, the kind of quote that I had with the marketing contact that I was having this discussion with and learning from them, continually discovering from them, was, I said, yeah, I'm all about not having too many cooks in the kitchen. I want to make sure that we're, being decisive and getting things moving forward, but I'm also all about having the necessary cooks in the kitchen. So sorry about that, man. We'll make sure that we're in good communication moving forward and kind of fix that as we go.
Totally. And I think you hit the nail on the head with that, right? Like, as companies grow, complexity and dependencies grow as well. And like the product organization has ballooned since right before we joined and when we joined. And I get asked that question a lot, right? Like, what's the difference between product management in a startup versus a larger organization? And I think that's one of them. There's probably more, but it's just complexity, dependencies, and making sure that you're keeping the right people informed and identifying who the right people are to keep informed is probably one of the most challenging things, especially when you're first starting out.
Yeah. Yeah. In a startup, and especially like the very small startups that I was in, I was the product. We obviously had developers, but I was the product manager. I was the QA engineer, the QA specialist. I was the data analyst. I was the head of product. I was the director of product. I was the VP of, in startups, you wear a bunch of different hats. And so it was kind of me reporting to me. But, with a bigger organization, like you said, as it balloons, there's other people invested in the same thing you're invested in. And what you do affects what they do. What they do affects what you do. And so it's important to make sure you have all the right people in the room and that you're all on the same page and moving towards the same goal.
Yeah. I remember, like, you reminded me of something a second ago. I talked to a director of product at Salesforce months ago on the podcast, and he mentioned something about like product managers having too narrow of a focus of who the customer is. And I've had to kind of come to terms with this, with the partner lane at Lendio, of identifying that we have multiple customers, and there's like primary customers, secondary customers. And I think you mentioned that too, right? Where there's like internal customers. And even if you're building internal products for internal customers, like downstream, it still impacts end users and end customers. So how do you think about like keeping the holistic customer and all the different types of customers you have that your work impacts? How do you think about that as you approach discovery?
That's a tough question. I think it's, again, just speaking from my experience, it has been a learn as I go type of thing. You know, I stumbled into product management and I haven't stopped stumbling since. it's, you know, again, continuous discovery. It's you learn as you go, and the more you uncover, and especially, you know, going back to the topic of working at a business bigger than just a startup, there's so many pieces to the product, and there's so many different products. It's impossible to just get in there and in one day learn everything, right? Rome wasn't built in a day, a classic saying. As you uncover more, you just kind of have to keep note as you go and as you continue to learn who is your customer. You got to keep note of that, and then you got to make sure that that customer, that definition of your customer, stays up to date and it stays accurate.
And there's a principle I learned pretty recently about second order effects. It's within the last year or two. And it's like the thing that you do directly impacts the person or thing you intended, but there's always second order effects. It's like a ripple effect where the initial ripple touches the intended target, but the continuous ripples touch other people. And like one of the things that we should do as product managers is think, okay, after it touches the intended target, what are those second order effects that are going to happen based on this? So like, almost kind of not predicting the future, but trying to think ahead to see like, what are the ramifications of this decision beyond the initial intent to try to mitigate risk or get ahead of things in coordination. And I think that's one of the trickiest parts about product, right? Is like, as you're going through this discovery process and you're trying to make decisions around priorities and what goes on the roadmap and how that aligns to strategy, yada, yada. Like who is this going to impact, and almost like map it out, right? So that way you can herd the cats or circle the wagons internally and make sure there's organizational readiness for like market readiness, so to speak.
Yeah. And that makes me think again, my rough around the edges education here. I guess I learned the hard way. I'm always learning the hard way. At one of my previous companies, we called it the law of unintended consequences. because that's what happened. You know, we thought we had the best idea. We did some research, we did some quick delivery, and it, like you said, it made the impact that we thought it was going to make. But then there were also a lot of unintended consequences that we didn't think through and we didn't account for. So yeah, what did you call it? The second order effect, was that right?
Right.
Second order effect, law of unintended consequences, whatever you want to call it. Yeah, it's going to do more of an impact than you think. You got to try and get the whole picture.
Totally. And like you said, we're going to stumble around. We're going to make mistakes, but as much risk as we can mitigate up front, the better, and the less those ripples, you know, sink a boat.
Yeah. And something you said, you know, mitigating risk and up front. I also think meeting with some aspiring product managers, one of the things that I try and like always tell them too is there's quick and efficient ways to mitigate risk and do your due diligence up front. You know, again, going to the very beginning or the first thought that we kind of discussed of finding that balance of how much discovery are you doing. You got to get creative with your discovery and your testing and your experiments. It's not always so straightforward. There's not always such a cookie cutter formula to how research and discovery should be done up front. That's one thing that makes product management so fun for me is the create the creative side of things that I get to do, and you know, the creativity that I get to use. You know, maybe I'm not painting pictures and writing music, and you know, in the typical sense of creative and creativity. But you definitely got to be creative, and there's quick and efficient ways to do your discovery, to mitigate risk, to find the unknown unknowns, and, you know, do all those things up front. So as you talk about making sure that you're doing your due diligence up front, you know, to those that are listening, I just say, get creative. It's not always A, B, C, D. Sometimes it's whatever the heck you want it to be. Get creative and do your discovery, and you can mitigate a lot of risk up front.
I love that you called that out, because I think a lot of times product managers talk about loving to be creative, and people hear that and think that it's like an artistic thing where you get into a design tool like Photoshop, right? And you come up with this beautiful thing, and it's really like creative thinking, because like, to your other point, right? There's not just one formula for discovery. I mean, there's some people that are advocates for jobs to be done, design thinking, continuous discovery habits. Like there's different frameworks and tools, but it's almost like a handyman being a product manager, where the more tools we have on our tool belt, the more equipped we are to handle different situations that come up, and to know when to pull the hammer or when to pull the screwdriver for what we're facing.
Yeah. I think that's a great analogy. Just having like your tool belt all filled, and having the knowledge and the expertise to know which tool is required for which situation. You know, just to share a couple examples, one of my most recent kind of discovery tools, I was just like, we had a project we were working on. We were trying to figure out how we could kind of validate that it was going to have the intended consequence, positive consequence that we were hoping. And I just kept having this feeling. I was like, no, I need to test this more thoroughly. I could just have something itching at the back of me that says like, I don't know if this is quite ready. So yeah, getting creative. I was like, man, how can we do this? I just pulled up a Google sheet, and I called it a simulation. And I just filled out a couple of cells in my Google sheet, and kind of copy and paste it down, and ran this simulation in the Google sheet to kind of run the numbers and see, okay, if we do what we think we're going to do, how are we going to look at the end of 60 days? And we were going to be in the negative. And I was like, okay, this is not going to work. let's go back to the drawing table and do some more discovery. Again, super quick and simple, very low cost, really, you know, effective though, that it raised red flags at the beginning, mitigating that risk, rather than, you know, implementing this whole process and then being kind of digging ourselves into a hole. On the other end, another example of kind of discovery, we were implementing another tool to help manage some stuff on our site without going into all the details. And really, I ran a thought experiment with one of my stakeholders. I said, hey, you know, this isn't necessarily a financial analysis tool. You know, by implementing this, I'm not telling everybody that we're going to make $100,000 more. I think this is going to have more of a psychological and behavioral change. So can I run a thought experiment with you? And so the thought experiment was, okay, imagine that this tool has been implemented. What are the very first things that you do with this tool? You know, how does this change your workflow and improve your workflow? Like imagine if this tool were implemented, what would you be doing differently, and how would you be doing it better? You know, so it's not always cookie cutter, the same thing. It's not always just like sit down face to face and do a user interview, ask a couple questions. Here's an Amazon gift card. Thanks. Talk to you later. Get creative with it. You know, there's lots of different examples.
I love that. And the scrappiness of it too, because I think sometimes we can get caught up in like the tools that are out there, the third party tools that are nice, like usertesting.com or whatever, right? Where it's like, oh, okay, we can get really crisp and precise with who we're talking to, the questions we're asking, and like automating these processes. And it's really tempting to get almost lazy with that stuff and say, like, we're gonna rely on third party tools when we are creative individuals who can come up with, like, if we critically think about something, we can come up with unique ways of testing a particular scenario at that particular time that makes sense to cheaply validate or invalidate some key assumptions before we go off and make an expensive bet by putting it on the roadmap, putting development time towards it to find out that it's going to fail when we could have done something quick, like you said, a quick simulation or a quick thought exercise to to figure it out.
Yeah. That scrappiness, man, it comes from those startups. you have to be a little creative there. So, and again, totally. The rough around the edges product manager, self-proclaimed.
No, I think it's a great point, right? Because I think a lot of people aspire to work for the big FANG companies like Google, Netflix, whoever, that are well-resourced and well-equipped to do some of this stuff and have all the tools in place that kind of make life possibly a little easier. But I think there is something to be said that, you know, if you are listening and you find yourself in a less well-resourced organization or in a scrappy startup, like those experiences are invaluable because you'll find yourself in a much better position when you do have resources around you to where you're not mentally confined to those things. You can figure things out on your own and not have to overly rely on the tools that are handed to you.
Yeah, I call them my sandboxes. The second startup I worked for, maybe we can do another podcast episode and I can tell you all about it because it's just the most unique setup you've ever heard about. But yeah, I called it my sandbox just because we were a scrappy startup and I just had so much opportunity to just experiment and learn that honestly, like I'm so grateful for. And I learned so much. And honestly, like, you know, we're talking to aspiring product managers and everything. It looked freaking good on my resume, man. all the things I was able to accomplish there and test out and try. Yeah, it wasn't one of the FANG companies. It wasn't Facebook. It wasn't Amazon. I didn't have an internship at Microsoft or any of those things. But getting in an interview setting and being able to like share my experience and tell people, this is what I did. This is what I've experienced. The success I had, the failures I had, what I learned from it. It didn't matter that it wasn't Facebook or any of those companies. People were impressed and they said, wow, that sounds like fun. And actually, multiple times when I talked about some of those sandboxes, multiple times my interviewers, they asked me, they said, wow, that sounds like fun. Why did you leave? I said, oh, well, career growth and what's the statistic? How many startups actually fail and how many turn into the unicorn? But they're invaluable experiences that I'm extremely happy where I am. I, in my own definition, I'm extremely successful and continuing on that path to success. So again, doesn't always have to be cookie cutter. You can be rough around the edges like I am and be all right.
Totally. No, I love that because I think with the right attitude and a learning mindset, you really can become a great product manager without any kind of like formal training, which there isn't really many good formal training settings anyway. So you almost kind of have to.
It's new enough.
For sure. Well, Taylor, man, I appreciate you coming on and sharing your perspective on discovery and the different experiences you've had and kind of how you think through things. And I think one of the big messages from this conversation, especially to the aspiring PMs is, and like newer ones, is one of hope, right? Like, just because you find yourself in a situation where you may not have experience or you may think you're not in an ideal company or you're not getting the resources you need, like there's always a way to figure it out and be successful. So I appreciate that.
Yeah. If I can make it, you can make it too, everybody. Don't worry. Just be creative. We all have creativity inside and be creative, be scrappy and just fight till the end, man. That's if I can make it, you can too.
That was Taylor Heyman, product manager at Lendio. Before you go, please subscribe, rate, and review, and share. And if you want to become a supporter of this podcast, I would really appreciate it. Just go to the show notes, click the support link, and for 99 cents a month, you can help the podcast grow and expand what we're able to do for you. So thanks for joining us today, and I'll see you the same time, same place next week on Lessons in Product Management.